There was a busload of politicians, and I always love anytime you start a story or a joke with a busload of politicians, you know it has to be good, especially as we come off such a difficult election season. But there was a busload of politicians, and they were headed towards a convention. And as they were headed towards a convention, they were rerouted because of a detour down some rural, more desolate area. And so as they were driving, the bus driver wasn't used to this desolate area, narrow roads, windy roads. And as he was driving, he lost control of the bus going around a turn. He went off into a ditch, and as the bus hit the ditch, it came up, and it ended up rolling two or three times, upside down, flipping head over end, ended up in the middle of a field, a farmer's field, out in the middle of nowhere. Later that day, the farmer was driving into town, and as he came by, he noticed that there was a hole in his fence. And so he pulled over to investigate. He went through the hole, went through the ditch, came up and saw the bus in the field with politicians strung everywhere. So he went back to his truck, he grabbed a shovel, came back out into the field, and began to bury all of the politicians. Well, he put the shovel back up, got in the truck, and went back to his house. Well, inevitably, the politicians didn't show up where they were supposed to show up, so people got worried. They sent a state trooper, and the state trooper backtracked along the track that they were supposed to go on. He followed the windy roads, the narrow roads, ended up coming to the same place where there was a hole in the fence, and he went through the hole in the fence, and he saw a bus, but it was sitting out alone in the middle of this field. So he got back in his car, and he followed the fence line, went in to where the farmer was, and the farmer was standing out in front of his farm, and the state trooper pulled up and said, "Listen, there was a bus crash, and it was in your field, and the bus is in your field, but there's no politicians around." And the farmer, without missing a beat, said, "Yeah, I buried them all." The state trooper said, "You buried them? What do you mean you buried them? You didn't call an ambulance? You didn't call a coroner? You didn't call the police? What if some of them weren't dead?" The farmer, without missing another beat, said, "Well, you know, there were a couple that said they weren't, but you know how politicians lie." So, that was my election season joke for you. You know, we did just enter into or just finish a contentious, ugly, ugly election season. And some people don't want it to end, I guess, but it was a mess. And for some of you, it was probably the ugliest election that you've ever experienced in your life. Some would say it was the ugliest election in our history, but if you've studied history, you know it's probably not even in the top five. Some of the earliest elections, Adams and Jefferson and Jackson and Quincy Adams, they were horribly ugly compared to what we had. But this one got pretty brutal. But it does have one historical footnote that we can find from the election season that we just went through. For the first time in our nation's history, the two political candidates from both major parties had higher negative rankings or negative ratings than they had positives. Over 70% of Americans in both parties said they did not trust the candidate that they were going to vote for. We spent a lot of time talking about all the things that we didn't like about our candidates, all the things that we didn't trust about that candidate or that candidate. A lot of time excusing their behavior. A lot of time trying to justify their behavior. Shouldn't surprise us that for the first time, as far as I'm concerned in my lifetime, and I've been voting since 84, that we had an election where character and integrity was not an issue. For the first time, we elected candidates where their character, who they were, and their integrity, what they said, didn't matter to us. Shouldn't surprise us. We've been on a slippery slope of lack of character and lack of integrity, not just in our political leaders, but in all of the leaders that we follow. I've heard it defined this way, that your character is what you do, what you stand up for, what you say when everyone is watching, versus what you believe when no one is watching. And your integrity is the gap between those two things. You see, your character is forged, it's framed by what you say you believe, and not just what you say you believe, but what you stand up for, and what you vocalize, and what you stand for when everyone is around. And your integrity, who you are as an integral person, is found in the gap between those two things, between what you say you believe and what you stand up for. You see, when you have a lack of integrity, there is a wide gap. When you have integrity, there is a narrow gap. And you see, for some reason in our country today, we think it no longer matters between what you do in public and what you do in private. But the Bible teaches just the opposite. Matter of fact, Jesus has been teaching us through the Sermon on the Mount that it is almost exactly the opposite. Because you see, the religious leaders, the ones who were the Pharisees, the ones who were in charge, they had fallen down the trap of believing that their righteousness was only based on what they did, only what they did in public, only what people saw. And that if everyone could see us being spiritual, see us making the right choices, doing the right things, then somehow we were okay. And Jesus comes along in the Sermon on the Mount and says, no, you got it all wrong. He says, not only are you held accountable for what you do, you're held accountable for why you do it. And Jesus comes along and says, listen, if you are going to be my follower, if you are going to be a Christian, then you are going to be held to a higher standard. You're not just held to the standard of trying to do the right things because you make it think it looks right. You're held to a standard of what does your heart look like? Because you see, as a Christian, as a follower of Christ, we are to put the character of Christ, which he told us about in the Beatitudes, into our everyday life. And that character transforms us from the inside out. And since that change takes place in our heart, then it is in the heart that we are to be judged. See, God looks at your heart as much as he looks at what you do. That's why you cannot, as a Christian, separate who you are in public and what you do in public and what you believe in private and what you say in private. And we've noticed in the end here of Matthew chapter 5, he's looked at six illustrations. Jesus has given us six things to give us an example of how that's true. He talked about murder, compared anger to murder. He talked about lust and compared adultery to lust. Talked about divorce and talked about divorce in our heart and our commitments in our heart. See, what he was trying to teach us is that it doesn't matter just that you do the right thing. What matters is why you're doing it. Because you see, if you've got a corrupt heart, you can do all the right things in the world. You can say all the right things. You can act all the right way. But if your heart isn't right, that's where it counts. And this morning, Jesus is going to talk about integrity. He's going to talk about the difference between what we say and what we do. See, Jesus is going to suggest to us that character does matter, that integrity matters, that our word should mean something. See, most of us grew up, your parents probably instilled in you that your character and your reputation was important. And their reputation was so important that it was worth doing whatever you could to protect it and to build on it. But that's not the case anymore. See, Abraham Lincoln said, if you want to raise up a child in the way they should go, then first you have to walk the path. And I'm afraid today the message that we are sending to the next generation, the message we are sending to those around us, is that words don't matter, character doesn't matter, and integrity is not important. Well, Jesus says, if you want to follow him, if you are going to lose the name Christian, then it does matter. Now, before we read what he says about integrity, let me just ask you this question. Have you ever thought or wondered what people associate with your name? Have you ever thought about what people think about when they hear your name? Honesty, transparency, character, integrity, reliable. Can you be counted on? Because you see, regardless of what society says, regardless of what happens in our culture, the culture can continue to throw away integrity, continue to throw away character. Jesus says it's important. You know, while I was studying this, while I was researching this message a couple of weeks ago, I came across a name that most of us probably are not aware of, but we've used the term before. It was a steamboat captain by the name of Captain Ezekiel Fudge. And Ezekiel Fudge lived in the late 1700s, early 1800s. And the reason we know his name is because as a steamboat captain, he got the reputation of not always being honest about his dealings, about his transactions. And so people around the Boston area would begin to say that when you weren't totally honest, you were fudging. And later those that would play marbles in the late 1800s began to use the term. When you were cheating at marbles, they would say, you're fudging. And now it has become a part of our common vernacular. How would you like your name to be associated with dishonesty? What do people say when they think about your name? What character traits do they associate with you? Let's look at what Jesus says. Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. Again, you have heard that it was said in the people long ago, and he's going back saying, this is what the Pharisees say, do not break your oath, but keep oaths that you have made to the Lord. But I tell you, Jesus saying, I'm going to add a new amendum to what he says, but I tell you, do not swear by either heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is the footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. And here's the key. Simply let your yes be your yes and your no be your no. Anything beyond that comes from the evil one. Anything beyond that comes from the enemy. Now let me just, before we look at what Jesus is saying here and how it affects our integrity, let me just say this. This passage has nothing to do with saying the pledge or putting your hand on the Bible and taking an oath. There are a lot of religions, a lot of faiths that would say, I can't say a pledge because he says here, don't say a pledge. I can't promise to do something. Some even would say that in a marriage ceremony, I've been at marriage ceremonies where they wouldn't say, so help me God, because they were afraid this passage was an admonition against that. When it's really just the opposite. You see, to say that this somehow is telling you that you can't say the pledge or that you shouldn't put your hand on the Bible and swear to tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God, that's more aligned to what Jesus is speaking against than what he's speaking for. That's more along the line of the legalistic attitude that Jesus is trying to come against. You see, we need to realize that oaths have always been important. You can find oaths all the way back to the beginning of the Old Testament. All the way through the Old Testament, into the New Testament, people took oaths. They made a promise on their word. They made covenants. They made commitments based on their word. But we also know that in the Bible, just like we've seen in the other illustrations, what was originally intended to be a guide just blew up when the Pharisees got a hold of it. See, we know that the third commandment, the Bible says in Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 7 says, do not take the Lord's name in vain. And so that when you swore, and you swore using God's name, you were taking it in vain. Now the Jewish people pushed that to the point that they didn't even say God's formal name. You couldn't even write God's formal name. Matter of fact, it was a death sentence for you just to say God's name in public. And so they had taken it to the extreme. But we know that we were called to be honest in our oath taking, honest in our commitments, because Leviticus 19 says this, you shall not swear falsely by my name so as to profane the name of God. So you see, in the Old Testament, they believed that if you made a vow, and you made a vow on God, that you were involving God into the vow. You were involving God into the commitment. That's where we get the idea of a covenant when it comes to marriage. When you invoke God's name, you are not just making a promise to your spouse till death do us part. You are making a commitment and a vow to God. And so they believed that if you made a commitment or vow and you used God's name and you didn't keep that vow, then you were taking God's name in vain and you could be punished even up until death. You made a promise and you said, I promise according to God. Then if you didn't keep that promise, you were punished to death. But you see, by the time that Jesus came along, the Pharisees had taken this idea of a vow. And like they did some of the others that we've looked at, they had corrupted it. They had tried to find ways to get around keeping their vows, but yet still making it sound important. They had a whole series of laws, and we've talked about all the laws that they added to the original laws. They had a whole system. The Mishnah is filled, which is their compilation of laws. It's filled with these ideas and laws about when you had to keep a promise and when you couldn't keep a promise. You see, they had made exceptions to say that if you said these words, you really didn't have to keep your promise. Or if you said these particular words, you didn't have to keep your vows. You didn't have to keep your commitments. And so they had set up a system so that you could promise to do something but really didn't have to follow through and it would still be okay. And that system was by saying, I make a commitment by, using the word by. I can make a commitment by Jerusalem. I can make a commitment by heaven. I can make a commitment by earth. I can make a commitment by my head. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying, you make a commitment and say, I promise I will pay you back the money you've loaned me by heaven. And by saying by heaven, really you didn't feel committed to have to follow through with that. You were saying, and really the only reason you were saying by heaven or by Jerusalem or by earth was to make it sound more important, to make it sound more spiritual. Now, in the Jewish law, if you said towards heaven or towards earth or towards Jerusalem, then you were committing yourself to follow through on that commitment. Then you had an obligation. But you see, as long as you didn't say towards, you can get out of it. As long as you didn't use those certain words. So they had this whole system set up to, as a way for you to get out of your promises. And it sounds crazy when you begin to think about it. And Jesus comes back, and what he's saying to them is, listen, it's not about the words you say. It's not about saying by or towards. It's not about saying, so help me God. It's about your heart. Because you can use whatever words you want. You can say whatever you want. But if your heart is corrupt, then it's useless. It was the corruption of the heart that led you to deceive others. And as I was reading this and I began to read through these laws, I thought, man, that it's just crazy that they had developed a whole system in books of ways that you could get out of keeping your word, keeping your promises. But before I began to laugh at them and think how crazy this was, I began to think about us today. And you see, before we begin to laugh or before we begin to cast judgment on the Pharisees, think about some of the things we say. Think about some of the things we do. You ever heard anybody say, I had my fingers crossed? You ever said, I had my fingers? What does that mean? Means that if I had my fingers crossed, then I don't have to do what I said I would do, right? If I had my fingers crossed, or I had my legs crossed, or I had my arms, whatever it is you did, if that's crossed, then somehow whatever I just said I would do, I'm not obligated to do. Why? Because my fingers. Where did we learn that? From our parents. Isn't that a system in place to allow us to promise to do something but yet not keep our promises? You see, we are no different than they were. Have you ever said to yourself, I don't have to do something because, and you made it your own excuses. Think about all the things we say on a daily basis that we just let slip out that we don't really mean. Have you ever told somebody it's only going to take 5 minutes? Somebody asked how do you get to your house? Listen, it's only going to take you 10 minutes, right? Have you ever heard or said to somebody, your table will be ready in just a moment? Do you know what just a moment means? That can mean anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes. We don't mean just a moment. We mean get out of my face, right? Think about some of the things that we say. The check is in the mail. If you elect me, I promise to. And we have no intention of keeping those promises. We don't even mean what we say when we say those things. It's just a way to get people off our back or to get people out of our face, right? How many times have you said something that you didn't mean or promised to do something that you had no intention of doing just to get somebody to leave you alone? Right? Listen, if I had a dollar for every time somebody out in the community has seen me and promised to be at church on a certain day, I could retire today. Right? Because that's what you tell the preacher when you see him, right? He's in the grocery store and he's coming along and you hadn't been in church in a little while. Oh man, I'm sorry I missed. I will be there Sunday. Yeah, right. Right? How many things like that do we say on a regular basis? I'll give you a call. I'll email you. What's your number? I'll get in contact with you. And we just let those words fly out of our mouth, not thinking that they had any consequences, not realizing that our lack of integrity speaks to our character. What about the promises we make to our children? Promises we make to our kids only to break because something else came along and we told ourselves, it's kids, they'll get over it. What about the promises we make to God? How many times have you told God, God, if you will only do this, I'll do something? Or God, I promise that I will do this if you will just step in and you'll commit to a ministry activity or commit to something at church only to drop out when it got inconvenient. How many times have you told somebody you'd pray for them and then didn't follow through? How many times have you told somebody, I'll be right there, only to be late? See, all of those words matter. All of those words count. All of those things that come out of our mouth have consequences. And it's easy for us to laugh at the people in Jesus' day because they find some kind of technicality to get them out of being obligated to their word. But we better be careful not to do the same thing ourselves. See, Jesus is warning them again. You can't separate who you are in private and who you are in public. You can't say, this is how I'm going to behave in this situation and then behave in this situation, because you don't control your faith. Your faith is supposed to control you. And you can't take who you are in Christ and lock it in a closet when you're around this group or you're around this group or you're speaking to this group and then pull it out on Sundays or Wednesdays or whenever you need to be spiritual. See, Jesus was trying to tell them, listen, it's all God's, right? They were saying, well, I can pray by Jerusalem, I can pray by heaven, I can pray by my head. And what's Jesus say? Listen, it doesn't matter the words you use, because if you pray by Jerusalem, that's God's holy city. If you pray by heaven, that's where God's dwelling. So all of it matters. He's warning them. It's all done in God's presence. Every vow, every promise, every word that comes out of your mouth, God hears. In verse 37, what he's trying to get us to understand is that we are to live our lives in such a way that our words matter. You see, he's trying to help us understand that our words and our promises and our vows matter because it reflects on our character. And why is that important to Jesus? Because our character is now his character. See, when we just studied the Beatitudes, what were we saying? Blessed are, blessed are, blessed are. That is us. When we get out of the way and allow the Holy Spirit to lead us in every area of our life, that's who we are. And our character is a light. And what kind of light is it? It is a reflection. And our life is a reflection of God's light. And when we make promises, when we make vows, when we make commitments that we have no intention of following through on, or that we get too busy or we get too occupied or too distracted to follow up on, that disrupts the light because it corrupts our character, and our character is not supposed to be ours anymore. It's supposed to be his. See, Jesus wanted us to understand words without action are worthless. And they reflect on a heart that has no character. So what does he want us to do from this? What does this mean? So what? It means that we need to be people of our word. That we need to commit to keeping our promises in all circumstances. Even when that promise may seem insignificant. Even when that vow may seem insignificant. Listen, the greatest test of our integrity come in the smallest areas of our lives. Because when we start to justify a little dishonesty, we start to justify why we don't have to do what we said we would do because of little reasons, what that does is it opens a door in our hearts to bigger areas of dishonesty. The moment we start trying to rationalize why we don't have to do what we said we would do, it destroys us. Every time a casual commitment is broken, there is an incremental amount of damage done to your character. And over time, it becomes abundant. Every little white lie builds into a big lie. Every little time that you say you'll do something, that you make a commitment, that you make a vow, and you back away from, it builds on top of itself. And sometimes we're just careless with our words, and we're not paying attention. Jesus is saying, guard your mouths. Sometimes we like to exaggerate. Sometimes we mislead. Sometimes we give false flattery. Sometimes we deceive, not intending to, but to make ourselves look better. All of those things may seem insignificant. Jesus is saying they're not. They develop your character. He says, keep your promises even when they seem insignificant. He also is telling us that we need to keep our promises even when it doesn't turn out like we expected. Even when we regret making them. You see, sometimes we make promises with the expectation of something in return, right? We make a promise and we think, maybe I'll have this amount of money or this amount of time or this amount of effort or this amount of energy. And when those things don't work out, we tell ourselves, well, it's okay that I don't fulfill my promise. It's okay I don't fulfill my vow. It's not. Sometimes we commit ourselves to doing something with an expectation of somehow we will get recognized or maybe we'll get praised, or maybe we will receive something tangibly. And when those promises don't pan out, guess what? You're not allowed to walk away. Because Jesus is saying your word is your character and your integrity counts. He says, keep your promises, even if they're insignificant. Keep your promises, even if you regret ever having made them. And then importantly, keep your promises, even if they are only to yourself. I mean, let's be honest. Some of the hardest promises we have to keep are the ones we make to ourselves. Because you see, when we make a promise to ourselves, we think there's no consequences when we break them. But what happens when we make a promise to ourselves, and what I mean by promise, you promise yourself, I'll never do this again. I'll never say that again. I'll never be around that person. I won't allow that person to hurt me again. We make promises to ourselves, not thinking that there are consequences when we break those promises, but there is. Because you see, the more we break promises to ourselves, the easier it becomes to make promises to other people. The more we allow ourselves to compromise in the little areas, the easier it gets to the big areas. You see, what Jesus is trying to make it clear to all of us this morning is no matter the vow, no matter the commitment, no matter the promise, when you make it, God is there. And if God is there, even if it's a promise you make to yourself, God is there. And by you lying, by you not living up to that commitment, by you not living up to that vow, you are basically lying to God. And not only lying to God, but you're destroying your character and destroying your integrity in the process. You see, it is our ability to keep our promises. It's our ability to keep our commitments that defines us. It makes who our character is. It's our ability to keep the promises if they're big or small, and keep our promises even when we regret it, and keep our promises even when we make them to ourselves, that develops integrity in us. That develops character in us, and it fortifies our witness. Because you see, you need to understand, people are going to judge our God by the way we act towards others. You see, when you claim that name, Christian, when you say, I'm going to follow Jesus, you take on His banner. Your character becomes His. Your name represents Him. The things that you say represent Him. And so when you back away from your commitments and your vows and your promises, when your word doesn't mean anything, not only does it reflect back on your character, but it reflects on the character of the one who you claim is in charge. Now listen, that's harsh. Because it's hard to be honest, isn't it? It's hard to keep all of our promises. We say so many things in a day. It's hard to live up to the things that we commit to. It's hard to follow through on our vows. And the good news for us is the Bible is full of people that struggled with their promises. I mean, Abraham stood before Pharaoh and he lied to him about his own wife. Told her it was his sister and not his wife. Jacob went to his own father and pretended to be his brother and lied to him to gain a birthright. Peter, who was a follower of Christ intimately, stood on the night that Jesus was arrested and denied even knowing Him. He lied about his commitment. He lied about even being a friend of his. And yet each of those people, when they were transparent, when they became honest, when they humbled themselves, the Holy Spirit took their willingness to change and created in them people of integrity. You see, so listen to me this morning. No matter where you are, no matter what commitments you have broken, vows you have broken, lies that you've lived up to, there is still hope this morning through the power of the Holy Spirit. Your character can be rebuilt. Your integrity can be established. God can mold you. But it takes humbling ourselves. It takes admitting where we failed. See, it takes understanding the power of your words. Understanding the power of a simple promise. Understanding the effects that those promises and those words have on our character and have on our integrity. I read somewhere that the true test of a person's character comes when being truthful endangers what we want most. You see, the true test for us is Will we be people of integrity and people of character when it costs us something? See, when it's just words and what people may think about us, sometimes we're just so quick to not care. But what about when it costs us a relationship? Are you willing to be honest? Be truthful? Stick to your commitments? What if it cost you financially? What if it cost you at work? What if it cost you your reputation to be a person of character? Because you see, the way our society is going, the expectation level today is it doesn't matter. You see, people of character are now the exception and not the rule. And there is coming a day when if you believe, if you stick to your commitments and stick to your vows, even when it costs you something, you will be the outsider. Does character matter to you? Proverbs 27 says, a righteous man walks in integrity, and blessed are his children that follow him. You see, everything that we do, everything that we say, no matter how insignificant, reflects back on our character. And Jesus is reminding us here that if we are going to be a part of his kingdom, then our words count. Our words matter. Let me read to you what the Message Bible says, how it translates or paraphrases this passage. He says this, verse 33, don't say anything you don't mean. For this counsel is embedded down deep in our traditions, and you only make it worse when you lay down a smokescreen of pious talk, saying things like, I'll pray for you, and never doing it, or saying, God be with you, and not meaning it. You don't make your words true by embellishing with a religious lace. In making your speech sound more religious, it becomes less true. Just say yes and no. For when you manipulate your words to get your way, you go down the wrong path. Just say yes and no. It sounds simple enough, and yet we know that speaking the truth is anything but simple. Character counts. Integrity counts. Your promises matter. Your words matter. I love when Harry Truman, he's one of my favorite presidents, and I love reading and studying about him just because he was a man of the people, and he was a man of integrity all the way through his election. From the time he was a county adjuster, just coming back from World War I, to the time that he was thrust unknowingly into the presidency. And he's always asked many times by reporters, what's the most important thing about being a politician? What's the most important thing you take away from being a politician? And when he was asked, he would give a quote from Horace Greeley, who was an editor of a newspaper. But it's a wonderful quote. This is what he would say he takes away from being a politician. He would say, fame is a vapor, popularity usually an accident. Riches can take wings, and those who cheer today will probably curse tomorrow. But one thing endures. Character. Character matters. It matters to you, and it matters to the God you serve. Let's pray.